Update. I'm Greta Cunningham.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board in Eveleth, facilitating business development in northeastern Minnesota.
It's 6 minutes now past 11 o'clock. And good morning. Welcome to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Eichten. Glad you could join us. Legislators, you'll recall, met for nearly 5 months during this year's regular legislative session and couldn't reach agreement on fundamental tax and spending issues. Since then, they've been meeting informally for over 2 weeks to clear the way for a special legislative session. But there's still no agreement on those fundamental tax and spending issues. In fact, yesterday, Senate Democrats canceled a meeting with House Republicans and Governor Jesse Ventura, saying there was really nothing new to discuss. The clock, of course, is ticking at the state capitol. On July 1st, state government will have to shut down if some agreement on those basic issues isn't reached. Today on Midday, we've been joined by legislative leaders Steve Swigum and Roger Moe to get an update on the legislative impasse. We'll also be opening the phone lines for your questions for the legislative leadership. But first of all, with a report from the state capitol, here's Minnesota Public Radio's Michael Kuh.
Governor Jesse Ventura had tentatively scheduled today for a one-day special session to approve the state's next two-year budget. Not only is no budget in sight, but lawmakers now appear as divided as they were when they ended their regular session late last month. And with less than 4 weeks remaining in the current fiscal year, House Speaker Steve Swigum says the possibility of a government shutdown has reemerged.
If and when nursing homes close their doors in July, if and when state government shuts down in less than a month, if and when taxpayers of the state of Minnesota do not get their rebate check, if and when property taxpayers in the state of Minnesota do not get significant permanent reductions, there is one group to blame, and that is the Senate DFL.
Senate DFLers called off a planned meeting with House Republicans in Ventura yesterday, saying there were no new proposals to discuss. House Republicans, standing outside the Senate chamber, called that attitude a serious roadblock to resolving outstanding tax and spending issues. But Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe says the GOP plan would cut business taxes at the expense of homeowners in lower-valued residences and would shortchange education.
Is the Senate standing up for average-valued homes to protect them from property taxes being shifted onto them from commercial and industrial property? Yes, we are. Is the Senate standing up, trying to make sure that we adequately fund our schools? Yes, we are. So if that's the blame, then we accept that blame.
Ventura declined to talk to reporters about the budget negotiations, but spokesman John Woodley indicated for the first time that the governor is leaning closer to the House position. Woodley says because of the impasse, Ventura is now preparing contingency plans in case state funding runs dry this summer.
He is very concerned that he is having to spend his time, his staff is having to spend time, his commissioners are having to spend time dealing with the real possibility of a government shutdown.
The major sticking point remains the level of property tax cuts given to Minnesota businesses. House Republicans say they're holding out for double-digit cuts for all types of properties, while Senate DFLers want to limit business tax relief in order to channel more revenue to education. Swigum says Democrats are trying to sabotage a budget framework reached by all three sides a week and a half ago.
The Senate is holding out for special interests, as opposed to the good of the state of Minnesota. They're not holding to an honor of an agreement, the intent of the agreement. And I find that, again, to be extremely, extremely unfortunate.
Senate leaders, however, say they've remained within the parameters of the budget pact. Moe says if they can't reach agreement by the end of the month, the Senate is willing to adopt a so-called lights-on budget that would simply maintain current levels of funding with some increases for inflation.
The Senate does not want government shutdown. We will do everything we can to avoid that. As I've indicated, as a backup, we would be more than willing to pass a lights on, put some sort of an inflation factor in for schools and the colleges and something for the state agencies to operate and let the rest of it all drop to the bottom line so that we can carry on this discussion.
While Mo says he'd rather see the state adopt the lights-on approach than accept the House or the administration tax plans, Republicans and the administration say they're not interested in the bare-bones deal if it excludes a tax bill. At the Capitol, I'm Michael Ku, Minnesota Public Radio.
Well, Senate Majority Leader Roger Mo has joined us now from our bureau at the state capitol, and House Speaker Steve Sligum is also on his way to our bureau, and we invite you to join our conversation as well. If you have a question about the stalemate for Senator Mo or Speaker Sligum, give us a call here, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free. That number is 1-800-242-2828. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. And Speaker Sligum has arrived. Senator Mo, thank you for joining us. Glad you could both be with us this morning.
Thank you. Nice to be with you again.
Yeah, and thank you, Gary. Thanks for that.
Let me ask each of you separately to get started here. Senator Mo, from your perspective, what is at the heart of the dispute?
It's the amount of commercial and industrial tax relief, and that amount then resulting in a shift onto the burden of the property tax onto other classifications, and then, of course, making sure that we link the statewide business cabin tax, since we all know that a well-trained, well-educated workforce is in our best interest, and that's certainly in the best interest of the businesses in the state, that we should link that with that statewide tax. So those are, I think, probably the two main issues that we have before us.
Mm-hmm. Speaker Sligum, from your perspective, what is at the heart of this dispute?
Well, I think at the heart, Gary, is the justice of what property tax reform is. Minnesota has done property tax buyouts, property tax relief, for a number of years, and we're talking about actually doing true reform. Reform that will take the system, make it more accountable, make it more a little more responsible, responsive to the services that are provided by governmental units at all levels. But I think it goes much, much further than just the property tax reform. I would tell you that that there are a number of other issues that are of concern. Equity in education funding. We in the House believe very, very strongly that there has to be much more equity brought forward in the education funding from the state dollars that are spent, so that school districts throughout the state, students share the dollars that are brought forward in a more appropriate way. I would tell you welfare reform is a very, very important issue. The Senate seems to want to maybe liberalize, maybe even destroy our welfare reform that we put into statute a couple of years ago, the 60-month limit, and the House feels very strongly that we are not going to extend welfare reform liberalization beyond those who simply cannot get a job because of a developmental disability. There's a lot of issues.
Mr. Speaker, let me ask you this. If there is no agreement, is there any way that you would, on these tax and spending issues, is there any way that you would agree to the so-called lights-on proposal that would essentially extend existing programs for the start of the new fiscal year?
No, I don't like the lights-on proposal at all, Gary, from the standpoint of those basic fundings being necessary to, if you have a situation that it's only lights-on, no increased funding for our schools, base funding, the current base funding for our state agencies, I think it runs into a very, very difficult situation from the standpoint of our priorities that we set. But Gary, also, very honestly, lights on means no tax bill.
Mm-hmm.
And that means people of the state will not be getting their rebate, their property tax reductions that they ought to be getting. I mean, we're talking about significant property tax reform that are going to give homeowners 22% reductions in their property tax rates, farmers 23%. I don't like taking that off the table when we should be able to provide on that hope and that opportunity.
But given the choice, I mean, if the only choice is the lights on versus a government shutdown, would you support the lights on plan?
Gary, I don't like the lights on plan.
Okay. Senator Mo, are you so wedded to your positions on on taxes and education spending and the rest, that it's worth threatening a government shutdown?
Let me say our first preference is to negotiate out an agreement. That's what we'd like to do. We'd like to move within the parameters that we have to negotiate out some of the differences that we have. That's our first preference. But I can't believe that the House would shut the government down if we got to that point and walk away from at least a basic operation of state government, some inflation factor for our schools and colleges, and the rebate. As we've indicated, we've already acquiesced on the rebate. We could certainly put that in place, and as well as keep the government running and continue the discussion and debate. I can't imagine that they would walk away from that.
Mm-hmm. But the House isn't happy with that idea. The governor has said he's not happy with it. If push came to shove, is sticking to your principles here worth a government shutdown?
Well, we have some major differences, and we certainly would hope that we can resolve them. And that's why I've indicated that pending not resolving those issues, if we can, obviously we'd like to have them resolved. There's no question about that. We want reform, but somehow we can't quite get to the point that reform means some homeowners will pay a greater burden of the property tax. That doesn't ring as reform to us. We want, obviously, to make sure that our schools are adequately funded and not choke off the opportunities for schools to raise revenue, and obviously concerned about the disparity that may be built in between high-spending and low-spending districts under this plan. There's more and more as some of the municipalities, some of the school districts analyze all of this, more and more questions are being raised. And so we think those are legitimate questions that have to be addressed. And obviously would love the conference committee to work on those and to resolve those issues. That's our first preference. But beyond that, no, we don't want to see government shut down. That's why we think a backup plan should at least be talked about, and that's why we're willing to look at that.
Mm-hmm. Another logistical question for both of you. There apparently is some talk now that the governor may call a special session without any prior agreement on these basic issues. Do you folks support that? What would that accomplish?
Gary, this is Steve. I think that would not be a wise decision by the governor. It seems to me that the governor calling a special session without a prior agreement does a couple of things. First of all, I don't know if it changes the scenario that we're in right now at all. I don't know what would change from us coming into session versus today when we're sitting here just across the table from each other on your radio show. I don't know what the scenario is that changes there. Second thing, you know, when the governor would call a special session, we could, well, without a prior agreement, there could be thousands of issues that would come up. We could well be in session until August. That would be a very, very disastrous scenario. I would certainly, as Speaker, do my best to prevent that. But, without prior agreements when you come into a session as to what the specific bills are that would be brought up, the fact that, they would not be subject to change, amendments, I can see a scenario that brings pretty much chaos.
Senator Mo?
If we're not there already.
No, I agree with the Speaker. I think the governor really would move from a fairly strong negotiating position now to a position where he really would have no control over it. Now the governor can pretty much be a key factor in terms of the agenda, as well as getting prior agreement, all of the things that I think would be critical. So I just don't see where the administration would do that, simply because I think they would give up a lot of leverage in this process that they now have.
Mm-hmm. We're talking this hour with Minnesota legislative leader Steve Sligum. He is the Speaker of the Minnesota House. Roger Moe is with us. He is the Majority Leader in the Minnesota Senate. And they have joined us from our bureau at the State Capitol to share their impressions of where we stand now in terms of legislative negotiations. The governor had originally said he wanted to call a special session for today to finish up all the work. Well, that hasn't happened because there aren't any agreements on the basic tax and spending issues that the legislature faces. They have joined us today from the Bureau to take your questions. If you'd like to call in, the number is 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Our first caller is from Minneapolis. Chris, go ahead, please.
Thank you for taking my call. First, to Speaker Sligum. If there is a government shutdown, I certainly will not blame the Senate Democrats. Those special interests that you refer to are the working people of Minnesota. I applaud Senator Moe's efforts to support public education, and I resent the media's efforts to portray Senator Moe as the obstacle here. I say stick to your principles, Senator Moe. You're doing a great job. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Gentlemen, care to comment?
Well, thank you, Chris, also for the reaction. I will take your words to heart. And Chris, I think as you look at the scenario that's taking place, though, you know, we have a agreement in principle, agreement in parameters. We're trying to reach out even from that. And Chris, I understand where you are coming from, and obviously you were probably even at the DFL convention in St. Paul on Saturday. I assume that's probably where you may have been. But Chris, honestly, on Monday, Governor Ventura went to both the House and the Senate, asked us to come forward with reasonable outreaches, reasonable approaches to the stalemate that exists. The House did so. The House responded to the governor's request. We came forward with suggestions to prevent the stalemate, Chris. The Senate did not do so. The Senate did not respond at all. And then yesterday when we were supposed to meet, the Senate decided not to come, that they would not participate in the negotiations, the further negotiations. So, you know, Chris, I understand where you are coming from. Obviously, your political leanings are well shown. But, you know, if you would step back for a second, I think you can see who is willing to cooperate and move forward and who is not.
Senator Moe?
Well, I think the Speaker, I think you're a little bit out of bounds for questioning her political motives. But let's see if we can get some things clarified here. As to the meeting yesterday, Commissioner Wheelock and Commissioner Smith indicated to me that they'd set aside a time in the afternoon to meet if there was a reason to meet, and said, now let me know if you think there's a reason to meet. After talking with our tax conferees and finding out that they were going back into conference at 1 o'clock and hope to continue the discussions and make some progress, it was my judgment that they'd made more sense for the tax people to be discussing their differences in public and trying to resolve those differences in public versus sitting at a meeting where it doesn't look like we're going to make any resolution. So that's the reason for me exercising my judgment that it made more sense to continue to negotiate at the table versus in the governor's office. Also, let me point out as it relates to the overall progress. Yesterday, our conferees indicated to the House conferees where they were talking about the rebate provision, and after discussing that, finally the Senate conferees said, okay, we'll take the House provisions on the rebate, and we'll go along with that. And we decided in terms of the rebate that we would go along with it before, but now it was the language, so we'd take the language, and the House wouldn't even accept that. And so it seems to me that there's some delaying also on that side of the table. But again, I think it's best for us to continue to negotiate and to negotiate at the conference committee table and see if we can get the accurate computer printouts of what the impacts will be. We haven't even seen any of those sorts of things as of yet.
Let me ask both of you this. How much money are we talking about? If what's in terms of how much additional money would be raised through a statewide business property tax that would go into the education funding? How much additional money is being debated here?
Gary, I think you could, in that specific question, and of course that's one question of an entire package, and you know you can't focus just in on the statewide business property tax, but I think at one time the difference probably existed between $425 million at the low level to about $725 million at the high level. And of course, that I believe not only included commercial industrial statewide business tax levy, but it was also on seasonal rec as well.
Mm-hmm. So about $300 million.
I think that was the outside parameters at one time.
Yeah, it's not anywhere close to that now. I think the differences are, I think within 100 and 120 million, if I'm not mistaken, based upon some of the latest suggestions.
Okay. Chris is online from Roseville with a question. Chris, go ahead.
I say a pox on both of your houses. Your job is to govern, not to be winners or losers. As a person that lived through in Washington, D.C., the shutdown of the federal government, I think it would be a shame and an embarrassment if the same occurs for Minnesota. And I hope that there will be political wrath on both parties for the inability to come to an agreement. Obviously, principles are important, but the bottom line is we need a budget. To be sure, a fair budget, but I don't think at this point either side can succeed by pointing fingers at each other without simply coming down and resolving the issue. And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay. Gentlemen, care to comment?
Chris is right. He's right. There's enough blame for everybody.
Is there a way just to split the difference? You always hear that as a way to deal with these issues. Cut the baby in half and go home.
We've cut a couple of times, Gary, I think already. And Chris, you know, your criticism is certainly taken to heart. You know, when I go home and I go to the baseball game or I go to church or whatever it may be, the track meet, I get much of the same reaction that Chris just mentioned, that we seem like school kids at St. Paul, not being able to agree, not being able to move forward. Chris, I take that to heart, but you appropriately mentioned the question of principles. And, you know, I'm not going to be so bold as to say that that I or the House is exactly right. I will not do that. I hope the Senate would not do the same. But, you know, both from the Senate and the House point, you get to a point where you maybe both have felt you've compromised, cooperated beyond where you are should go. You've negotiated against yourself a few times. I know I've felt like that. I know I felt like that on Monday when we gave an offer, and then on yesterday when the Senate wouldn't show up at the meeting. You know, I felt like maybe we were negotiating against ourselves. But principles, you know, Chris, I'm glad you mentioned that, because at least you know that we're standing for something. It may not be what you agree with, Chris. I understand that, but at least we're standing for something. And you know, I've been criticized many times in the past for caving in, and that's not fun either, Chris.
Senator Moe?
Well, again, let me talk about one important principle, and let me just quote from this morning's Pioneer Press, where Commissioner of Revenue Matt Smith, let me just read the account, has acknowledged for months that Ventura's tax plan shifts property tax burden away from business and onto lower-valued homes. The House Republicans who adopted Ventura's plan argue that would be fair because those homes now are taxed at a rate that is far lower. You know, that's just a principle that we have a problem with. Now, that may be their principles, but that's not a principle that I would say demonstrates reform in the property tax system. And so, you know, we'll continue to debate and to try to resolve our differences. Chris is right. Nobody's going to be immune from criticism in this process. Hopefully, we can get it resolved. But there are some fundamentals that are very important to us.
And on the House side, Gary, we just don't think that a $76,000 house, a house valued at $76,000, is any more a wealthy house. We're one of two states, the state of Montana and the District of Columbia, that has different tax rates on housing levels. And in Minnesota, that break point is $76,000 currently. Now, arguably, the Senate has been willing to move and to increase that level. But a $76,000 house is, you know, you start looking at market values in most housing in the state, and you can no longer call that a wealthy home. It is not a wealthy home anymore, and I think that movement and reform in that area is extremely, extremely important.
Again, Gary, let me just point out these guidelines that we adopted the other day. The Senate already conceded to having the split at $500,000, a $500,000 house. That's the split now between the two varying classifications. That seems to me to be a fairly significant concession to the House and to the administration on this whole issue.
There was also a very other important parts of the agreement, if not in intent, if not in specifics, at least in intent, that are trying to be destroyed by what I would term New York City lawyer types. That are trying to make sure that the T's are not crossed and the I's are not dotted with the intent of the agreement that we made.
Well, again, Gary, just so you know, that at the bottom of the page of the two-page issue that we agreed to the other day, it indicates that issues open that remain to be negotiated. Those are the issues we're trying to negotiate. You know, what is a fair local government aid formula? How do you structure it so that some communities who will not have the that may have high commercial and industrial or high seasonal recreational property values in those, how do we figure out strategies to help those communities? The amount of raised by the statewide business cabin tax, those are negotiable items along with a number of others. And that's what we're trying to do, is to negotiate within the framework of the plan. And for the speaker to say that we're violating that plan is wrong. It's just flat wrong.
Gentlemen, we have to take a break here for headlines, but we'll get right back with our conversation here. We're talking this hour with Minnesota legislative leader Steve Swigum. He is Speaker of the Minnesota House. Roger Moe is the Majority Leader in the Minnesota Senate. Again, if you have a question for the legislative leaders, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. More questions from those of you listening in just a couple of minutes.
Today's programming is supported by 3M, which generously matches more than 900 employee contributions to Minnesota Public Radio.
Just how vulnerable is the constitution of the American investor?
Perhaps today's investors will prove to be a hardier breed, more resistant to bad news. But while the economy may have changed, human psychology probably has not.
I'm David Brancaccio. That plus the latest on the markets later on Marketplace from PRI.
Tonight at 6:30 here on Minnesota Public Radio. Programs on Minnesota Public Radio are made possible by the annual support of listeners like you. We'd like to thank you. Here's Greta Cunningham now with some headlines. Greta?
Thanks, Gary. Good morning. In the first of its kind mid-season session change of command, the U.S. Senate has convened under Democratic control. The Democrats gained power for the first time since 1994, thanks to Vermont Senator James Jeffords leaving the Republican Party. New Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle is reminding Democrats that although they're in control of the Senate, they hold a slim majority. Outgoing Majority Leader Trent Lott told his colleagues that Democrats and Republicans have worked together in the past and can do so again. Timothy McVeigh's lawyers say there are some 360 names in recently released FBI documents in the Oklahoma City bombing case that they've never seen before. They're asking a federal judge to delay the convicted bomber's execution in light of the new documents. Some relief may be on the way for AIDS patients in dozens of poor countries. Drug maker Pfizer is expanding its free distribution of an AIDS drug to patients in 50 nations. The drug treats an infection of the brain that occurs in 10% of AIDS patients. In regional news, the anti-abortion group Minnesota Citizens Concerned for Life named a new executive director today. Scott Fishbach will assume the job that Jackie Schweitz has held since 1984. Schweitz is moving to Florida with her husband and will leave her position effective December 1st. Fishbach is the husband of Republican State Senator Michelle Fishbach of Painesville. He's held several positions with the National Right to Life Committee and the U.S. Catholic Conference of Bishops. He's also been a consultant on the presidential campaigns of Bob Dole and former President Bush. 20 South Dakota state government employees have been fired or disciplined for violating internet use rules at work. The governor's office says some viewed thousands of internet sites, while others visited inappropriate web pages. The forecast for Minnesota today calls for cloudy skies statewide. Some scattered showers and thunderstorms are possible this afternoon. High temperatures ranging from 68 to 75 degrees. Right now in Thief River Falls, it's overcast and 57. The same in Worthington, overcast and 57. Duluth reports cloudy skies and 57 degrees. And in the Twin Cities, some clouds with a temperature of 56. Gary, that's a look at the latest news.
All right, thanks, Greta. It's about 24 minutes now before 12, and legislative leaders Roger Moe and Steve Swigum joined us from our bureau at the state capitol to talk about the impasse that continues. Governor Ventura had hoped to call a special session today to finish work at the legislature, but that was not possible because there are still wide areas of disagreement on key tax and spending issues. Gentlemen, I want to get back to our callers here, but could you, in a nutshell, each of you explain, because this comes up a lot, at least in the news coverage, and not to oversimplify things again here, but in terms of proposed property tax reductions, the way it's been reported is that pretty much all types of property would get a tax cut of about 20%, homes, apartments, and so on and so forth. Except for business, they'd get a 10% cut under this agreement that was announced a couple of weeks ago. Why should or should not business get a 10% property tax cut? Senator Moe, why is that too big?
Well, first of all, we believe that commercial and industrial property should have tax reductions, no question about it. The issue here has to do with the amount that you cut the commercial and industrial property tax and the impact of that reduced rate impacting other property classifications. I've seen printouts that indicate that not all property will get tax cuts in next year. So these are questions that are still being raised, and I think it's important that we know all of the details on this before we kind of move ahead on all of it. No question about it, we have a difference of opinion as to how much the commercial and industrial tax reduction should be. I think we had about 4% initially in our, if I'm not mistaken, about 4% is the reduction in commercial and industrial. We'll certainly open to discussion about that. But again, our major concern is the shifting effect beyond the not only the immediate, but also beyond when the levy limits expire based upon the agreement for a two-year levy limit.
Speaker Swigum.
Well, when you look at the tax bill, Gary, that the House has presented and the property tax reform, property tax reduction, let me give you the numbers first and then talk about the business tax reduction in specific. The numbers in our House bill would provide that apartments statewide would have a 27% reduction, permanent reduction in property tax burden. Again, we hope that that would be passed upon those who rent in apartments, and with the availability of more apartments being built in the state, I think that that would probably be true. The American adventure, the American experiment that the market still works, I think is true. Farmers would receive a 23% reduction, permanent reduction in their property tax burden. Homeowners, about 20% reduction. Seasonal recreational properties, about 16. And with our last offer, businesses, about 10% reduction. You know, less than half of what we're trying to do for homeowners or farmers or apartments. I believe that there ought to be some recognition for the job producers for very, very high tax properties in the state that they receive that reduction. And Gary, I think our overall goal, if you have goals in mind, would be in the business tax area to be able to get those taxes out of the top
can as we look at the comparisons of other states. Basically, right now, we're probably number two or number three. It varies dependent upon the size of the property and where it's located, outstate Minnesota, greater Minnesota, or in the metropolitan area. But we're two, three, four, someplace in that area. To get us out of the top 10, and Governor Ventura strongly states and agrees with the House Republicans on this, it would take that minimum of a 10% reduction to get us out of the top 10 rates. And we think that's fair when we certainly look at fighting for farmers at 23% and homeowners at 20% and apartments at 27%. I don't think that you can say that that's out of balance at all. I think that seems pretty fair.
Howard, your question for the leadership, please.
Well, you know, I just heard in public radio this morning that the tuition of our colleges and universities in the state of Minnesota is going to go double digit, and that's going to impact our working class students. And we're asking them to take the brunt of these tax cuts. And we're losing out on the educational resources of this state by sending students elsewhere. I think it's absolutely important to take a look at that. And by the way, I'd be glad to give up my rebate. And don't tell me to send it back in like Jesse Ventura suggested. I think most of the people I talk to would like our tax rebates to go to our local schools and our state universities and colleges. And I hope Roger Moe will stick to his guns.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Howard. Now, the Higher Education Working Group finished its work last week. Is that business of the higher education bill, is that a horse that's essentially left the barn here? Is that agreement done now, or is that open to being reopened and restart the whole debate over how much money should be spent on higher ed? Gentlemen?
Well, I think that bill is one of the two bills that there has been some decision made both upon the target as well as the conferees themselves. Obviously, Gary, in any agreement, anything can be reopened until you have the final deal done. But it looks like that is decision has been made. The increase for higher education, although certainly not what the institutions wanted, is more than double of what Governor Ventura recommended. Very, very significant increases over what the governor recommended. And Howard, As far as telling you not to send it back into the state, as Governor Ventura recommended or said you could do, I won't insult you by doing that. I do know, though, that if you don't want your rebate and if you do not believe that you're entitled to the overage of taxes that you've paid, and Howard, if you'd like to, in a free society, and I think we still are somewhat of a free society here in the state, if you and your friends or neighbors or whoever you spoke about wants to take your check and bring it to your local school or your local college or your local university, I'd pretty well bet that they'd cash your check. And you sure would have the opportunity to do that and maybe make a decision yourself as opposed to government politicians, kind of forcing the confiscation for you.
Senator Moe, from your perspective, is the higher education bill still up for grabs, or has that been pretty well agreed to now?
Well, I think Howard has at least touched on, for us, what is the parallel rail in this, and that is education funding. The amounts that we've set in terms of the targets to negotiate, we're not particularly pleased with them, but we will negotiate within them. But the overall amount is about $220 million less for all of education than what passed the Senate. They have been able to come to an agreement on a higher education funding bill. Would I have liked to have seen that better? Yes, I would, because what Howard mentioned is, in effect, what will happen. There will be tuition increases beyond what I think is what would be considered inflation, and that basically is a cost of government service. It's a tax, and it falls certainly on middle-income families. And so there is a way of avoiding that, and we could have tried to have gotten more money into higher education. As it relates to the rebate, let me just say, there's no doubt that we don't disagree with the speaker when he says that it's the taxpayers' money. No question, it is the taxpayers' money. But also the roads are the taxpayers' roads and the schools are the taxpayers' schools. And that's why we proposed to try to balance that up. Our initial proposal was to have half the rebate and use half of it particularly to address some pretty important one-time needs like congestion and bottlenecks here in the metropolitan area or road and bridge issues in greater Minnesota. So we tried to find a balance in that, but we have conceded to the House and to the governor on the rebate. I'd still strongly encourage them to seriously look at putting it into the budget reserve, considering the uncertainty of the economy. But if they insist upon a rebate, we are ready, willing, and able to go along with that.
Andy, quick question, please.
Yes, I'm concerned about the link between residential property tax decreases and K-12 education. I think it's my understanding that in the proposed governor's budget, he was going to extend the sales tax to services, and that was what was going to fund the shift if the state took over K-12 funding. Since there is no projected change to tax services, is it still projected that the state will take over K-12 funding, and is that the only source of residential property tax reduction?
Okay. Can you, gentlemen, put that in English for us, your answer?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I'll try. This is Speaker Swigum. And was it Andy?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay, Andy. I think in the governor's original budget, and maybe we perceive different things, we certainly in the House and Senate did not go along with the governor's extension of sales tax to services and to labor. While that was a very strong reform that the governor wanted, we in the House felt very strongly also that we did not want to extend or raise the taxes at this time. My perception was that that was kind of tied to the income tax reduction across the board, income tax reduction that the governor had in his tax proposal, not necessarily to the reduction of the state paying the mandated costs of the local education levy, the takeover of education costs. Andy, I would tell you that, you know, while we have funding for our schools in the bill, which is, you know, is it everything, again, that education wants? No, it is not. But I will also tell you, Andy, as I speak to a lot of my friends and neighbors, I can't tell you the number of folks, friends, neighbors, letters, calls I get about the property tax valuations and property tax burdens that people are being forced to pay today, whether it be farmers that are struggling with $4 soybeans and you know $1.60 corn and not being able to make it, or whether it be homeowners that have called me and said, every year my valuation goes up and I can no longer afford to pay my property tax. I'm on a fixed income and I bought this home when it was $70,000 and now it's worth $200,000 or it's worth $150,000 or $225,000. Yeah, Andy, I feel for those people, and I think that we need to reduce permanently those property tax burdens and do it in a reform proposal that's not just buy-down. And, Andy, we'll try to bring the balance forward, which I think is appropriate to bring some adequate funding for schools, as well as cut those property tax burdens on the residential properties that you refer to.
Mm-hmm. Senator Moe, can we long-term afford the property tax reductions that are being talked about?
Well, it depends upon which ones you're talking about. Obviously, there are some differences. Part of the reason we advanced the plan that we did, which is certainly less than the House, no question about that, was because we felt that we could sustain that kind of property tax relief. Again, it remains to be seen whether or not you can go to the upper end and sustain it. Part of what Andy talked about, though, I think what it does, it highlights the complexity of all of this. And we also have agreed at this stage to have the state pay for the mandated levy. I mean, that's a part of the agreement. There are other factors, though, that are important to us. Some provisions in the K-12 bill that we felt strongly about, that we were able to agree on a portion of it, not as much as we'd like, but nonetheless, we've made progress there. I think one of the things that we are concerned about, however, and let me see if I can frame this based upon different geographies in the state.
Okay, I want to get some comment here from the governor's office before we wrap up, too, Senator.
Okay, I'll be quick. One of the in this blueprint that we've agreed to the other day, commercial and industrial property is not immune from local excess levy referendums. Okay, that's an area where local school districts can go and raise revenue for excess levy. Well, the real growth in commercial industrial is primarily here in this urban area. However, the real growth areas in the rural areas, which is seasonal recreational property, those are not eligible under the excess levy referendums. And so our concern is that if school districts need additional revenue and they were going to pursue that through an excess levy, I don't see where they're going to pass in areas that have high agriculture, high seasonal recreational, low commercial and industrial, because the homes are just not going to be able to bear it. And so I think it'll accentuate some of the high spending and low spending school districts. But again, these are issues we're trying to work our way through.
John Woodley's on the line, communications director for Governor Ventura. Hi, John. John, there's been talk. Well, what's the latest here? Is the governor thinking about calling a special session without some kind of a prior agreement? Is he just going to wait and see if some agreement can be reached between the legislative leaders? What's the latest?
That's always been an option for the governor, to call a special session without an agreement, but it's not an option that he has chosen yet. And I think it's safe to say that he would prefer not to do that. Mm-hmm. He would prefer that the sides come together and that we have an agreement on the parameters of a special session, and that it be a one-day session, and we have agreement on the omnibus budget bills and the tax bill and the bonding bill, and do that alone, and everybody go home.
Without getting too insidery here, what would be the point of calling a special session without that prior agreement?
Well, there's a lot of speculation out there. I mean, when you come to the table and try to figure out ways to bring this to a conclusion, you have to look at the various options that might put pressure on the Senate and the House to come together. And so you look at you say to yourself, what if we called a special session? Would that put additional pressure on? Would that aid the cause? Would that cause them to be more resolved to bring it to a conclusion? Would the people then see that the sessions are existing, and that would the perception change? You weigh those things, and at this point we have not chosen to do that because we don't believe it's to anyone's benefit. At this point we think the benefit is for the Speaker and the Majority Leader to be talking to each other and come to an agreement.
Finally, sir, if you have to choose, if the governor has to choose between this so-called lights-on strategy, basically just continuing funding at its present level, or shutting down the government July 1, which way is he going to go?
Well, we won't choose that, Gary. The legislature has the power to pass a tax bill and pass a spending bill, and we anticipate that that's what they'll do.
And if they don't?
And if they don't, then they will choose to shut down government.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you joining us.
Sure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
John Woodley, who is communications director for the governor. So, gentlemen, I guess the ball's back in your court. We only have about 30 seconds here. Is there any reason for people to believe that the stalemate will be broken soon? Senator Moe?
Well, we'll continue to negotiate. There's no question about it. We are negotiating within the guidelines that we agreed to the other day. And I think people are trying to come up with some ways to offset the potential impacts on some of the homes. I know we're looking at and had some discussions mm-hmm. about increasing the circuit breaker allowance and things like that would help. So, no, we'll continue to talk. Our interest is in resolving it.
Speaker Swiggum, very briefly.
Yeah, and certainly from our side, we want to resolve it too. I think speaking for all legislators, we want to get back to our families, back to our jobs, back to where we ought to be. It's not fun being here in June. Having said that, in order to negotiate, Gary, the House is more than willing to reach out, to be within the parameters, but it also means then that the Senate has to negotiate and has to show up.
Gentlemen, we have to run. Thank you so much for showing up for our program today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe, House Speaker Steve Swiggum joining us from our bureau at the State Capitol.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 6th of June, 2001. It's the birthday of playwright Harvey Fierstein, born in Brooklyn, 1954, author of Torch Song Trilogy, about a drag queen's search for lasting love. It was on this date in 1949 George Orwell's 1984 was published, a novel set in a future world dominated by three police states continually at war with each other, in which the hero, Winston Smith, a minor official, longs for truth and decency and rebels secretly against the government. It was on this day in 1944 the largest amphibious assault ever took place, D-Day, the Allies crossing the English Channel, landing on the beaches of western Normandy. The American troops landed at Omaha and Utah beaches, Canadians at Juneau, British at Gold and Sword. At least half the Allied casualties came at Omaha Beach, where the Allied air and sea bombardment had been misdirected, striking far inland. 130,000 men landed by the end of D-Day. 9,000 were killed or wounded. It's the birthday of poet Maxine Kuhlman, born in Philadelphia, 1925. Her poetry collection, Up Country, Poems of New England, won a Pulitzer Prize in 1973. She began writing poetry seriously when she was in her mid-30s. She was married, the mother of three, living in a suburb of Boston. She was, in her own words, acutely miserable, and joined an adult education poetry workshop that included Anne Sexton, with whom she stayed very close friends. She's also published five novels for adults and more than 20 books for children. It's the birthday of novelist Thomas Mann, born in Lübeck, Germany, 1875. His first novel was Buddenbrooks in 1901. It was for The Magic Mountain in 1924 that he received the Nobel Prize in Literature. He himself considered his greatest work to be his four-book cycle on Joseph, Joseph of the Bible, the tales of Jacob, the young Joseph, and so forth. But this evaluation was shared by very few critics. Here's a poem by Maxine Kuhlman on her birthday, Appetite. I eat these wild red raspberries, still warm from the sun, and smelling faintly of jewel weed, in memory of my father, tucking the napkin under his chin, and bending over an iron stone bowl of the bright druplets, awash in cream, my father, with the sigh of a man who has seen all and been redeemed, said time after time, as he lifted his spoon, men kill for this. A poem by Maxine Kuhlman, Appetite, from her Selected Poems 1960 to 1990, published by W.W. Norton and Company, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, brought to you by the people at 21NorthMain.com, where book lovers find 13 million gently read classics, bestsellers, and rare masterpieces on the web at 21NorthMain.com. Research by Ellie Jackson and Richard Mosher. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.